Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, helping you proceed through your divorce with a clear head and a clear heart. I'm your host, Rebecca Baumgardnerini. I'm a licensed Nevada attorney, a practicing divorce lawyer, and author of Everything You Need to Know About Las Vegas Divorce, which is available right now on Amazon. This podcast gives practical advice on how to successfully survive a divorce from both a legal and a psychological perspective. Today's topic is how to feel validated when you're getting a divorce in a no-fault divorce state. Now, most states now have adopted no-fault divorce laws, which means that the dissolution of a marriage does not require a showing of wrongdoing by either party. So in no-fault divorce states, a judge is enabled to grant a divorce without either party having to prove evidence that the defendant has committed breach of marital contract. Now, what does that mean? That used to mean that one of the spouses has done something such as adultery, abandonment, felony, and other wrongdoings in the marriage. Now, one interesting thing that used to happen before no-fault divorce laws were instituted is that the other spouse would then plead a defense to whatever they were being accused of. And one of the defenses was called recrimination, which effectively means, well, so did you. So in cases where the defendant spouse pled recrimination and the judge adopted that argument, so the judge found that, yes, both of you are at fault, the judge could legally find both spouses at fault and could decline to grant a divorce altogether. So that means that these two people who just put all of their dirty laundry on display in front of a judge would have to be forced to stay married to each other. That doesn't mean they had to still live together, but that means neither one of them could remarry. And especially if there were kids involved, that there were no provisions in place in terms of what to do with the kids. So I personally couldn't imagine having to go through and prove fault in a lot of the cases that I do. And there are many benefits to having no-fault divorce laws. In fact, two economists, Betsy Stevenson and Justin Wolfers, have found that the domestic violence rates in states that have adopted no-fault divorce laws has decreased by up to 30%, which I think everybody could agree that that's a pretty staggering statistic, and that's a wonderful result. Probably wasn't an intended result of the legislature who adopted these laws, but it's still a great result nonetheless. Now, people on the other side of the fence might say, but this has led to an increase in divorce rates, which maybe it has. However, before, you didn't really have all that much control over your personal life because you had to have a complete stranger, a judge, grant you permission to legally walk away from a bad marriage. So if you couldn't prove one of the breach of marital contract issues, or if, for instance, your spouse pled recrimination and the judge found both of you at fault, then you would have to stay in this marriage. So I think even though divorce rates may have increased, it's led in an increase also in the control that people have over their lives. And it also enables people to move on after a bad marriage. Now, obviously, if two people are getting divorced, it's for a reason. It's not because they love each other and things are flowery and wonderful in the relationship. But in no-fault divorce states, it doesn't really matter why you're getting a divorce. For instance, in Nevada, all you have to plead to the judge is that you two are incompatible in marriage and reconciliation is not possible. That's all you said. That's all you have to say. And that's the reason why judges will grant you a divorce. Despite this, a lot of my clients or prospective clients still come into my office and they want to lay everything out and they want the judge to know. And that's what a lot of them say to me. Well, I want the judge to know that he's been emotionally abusive, or I want the judge to know that he had three affairs. Frankly, though, it does not matter. Now, there are very limited circumstances where some of the dirt from your marriage does come up. And first of all, you have to have kids for most of it to matter. So things like domestic violence, even typically that does not matter in a divorce, and it doesn't entitle you to get anything more in your divorce. Now, it certainly is relevant if you have children. Nevada, just like many states, has a statute that says that if a judge finds beyond clear and convincing evidence that one of the spouses has engaged in an act of domestic violence against the other, then that perpetrator's spouse should not be the primary or even joint physical custodian of the children. Physical custody refers to where are the kids living most of the time, and it implicates things like child support. So if you can prove that your spouse has been violent against you, has perpetrated acts of domestic violence against you, then that is absolutely relevant towards custody determinations. And I've done many trials just on whether the judge is determining just on whether there has been an act of domestic violence. One act, that's all you need to prove, at least here in Nevada. A lot of states have similar statutes. And certainly anybody could agree that if it is a domestic violence situation, then that should be relevant towards a custody determination. Now, the other one that comes up a lot is cheating. Cheating is certainly one of the most painful things that you can go through in a marriage, but for the most part, it's not relevant towards your divorce. It does not ordinarily entitle you to any more money, or it doesn't entitle the judge to punish your spouse for cheating on you. Now, there is a thing called marital waste in some states. It's called community waste. And that means that one spouse has engaged in some kind of spending that couldn't have possibly benefited the community. And by the community, I mean the partnership or the marriage. So normally, most of the expenses that you spend money on during a marriage are presumed to benefit the community. So even when you purchase clothes and shoes for yourself, that benefits the community, even though it might not directly benefit your spouse, because the community, the members of the community, need to clothe themselves. Now, there are certain limited expenses that nobody could argue benefits the community in any way. So drugs, prostitutes, affairs, gambling is a big one. Also, you can't say that that benefits the community in any way. So when it comes to affairs, if you can prove, and it's very difficult to prove, that your spouse has spent a significant amount of the marital funds on an affair, then you may be entitled to reimbursement for what your spouse has spent. So let's just say, for example, husband is cheating on wife. He has a mistress who he takes on these very expensive vacations. He buys her furs and jewelry and other expensive gifts. And let's say that the wife can prove, this can't just be her word against his, but she would have to prove that he has spent $100,000 on this mistress over the course of a marriage. She can seek reimbursement for that $100,000. And so that would give her a little more money to walk away out of the marriage with. Now, every state is different, so the way I'm describing it is how we figure out in Nevada, but a lot of states are very similar and have similar provisions and laws that enable a spouse who has been cheated on to seek reimbursement for money spent on affairs. Now, the money we're talking about, it has to be real money, because I've certainly had people come into my office and I've had clients where, yes, you know, they found a hotel receipt here and there, but it's a, you know, a $59 a night hotel. It's, you know, their spouse isn't spending real money. Now, should they be spending any money? No, of course not. But in terms of a business decision, how much money is it going to take you to pay your lawyer to prove that your spouse did spend a couple hundred dollars on his girlfriend or on her boyfriend? It really doesn't make sense as a business decision. And while technically you have a correct and enforceable argument, it doesn't really make sense for you at the end of the day. Your divorce lawyer's job is not to make the judge punish your spouse for being a bad spouse. As much as people would like that to happen, judges, frankly, in no-fault divorce states, are just not interested in why you are getting a divorce. They're very busy. They just want to help you figure out the big stuff. So how to split up the property, how to split up the debt, what to do about child custody. Is anybody entitled to spousal support? And should child support be paid back and forth? Those are the big five issues that need to be figured out. And certainly in other states, there are other issues that need to be addressed. But for the most part, that's all that really matters, unless you fall into one of these very limited situations where your spouse has gambled money away or your spouse has cheated. But at the end of the day, the judge does not care to opine on the behavior of you or your spouse during the marriage, unless, of course, it's relevant to the kids or something like that. So a lot of people expect, they say, I want the judge to know about this. And I tell them, first of all, the judge doesn't want to know. So if we bring it up, the judge is going to be upset because it's kind of a waste of everybody's time. And secondly, the judge isn't going to do anything about it, even if he or she does know. So it's hard for a lot of people to feel validated because they expect a third party authority, like the judge, to step in and say, you've been wronged, or and look at their spouse and say, you've been a terrible spouse, shame on you. But that's not how it goes, and that's just not what happens. So if you're in the position where you're so angry and hurt that you want to seek revenge, don't try to do it through your divorce. A lot of people do, and a lot of people expect that the divorce process is just going to be terrible, and it's going to be this knockdown, drag-out fight, and certainly sometimes they are, but they don't have to be. And at the end of the day, you reach the same destination. So do you want to take the quick and less expensive path, or do you want to take the brutal, winding, expensive path that just gets you to the same place at the end of the day, but by the time you get there, you're exhausted. Emotionally, you're completely drained, and financially, you're usually drained as well. That's not good for anybody. Divorces are expensive, time-consuming, and draining to your energy no matter what. So it's up to you to decide how you are going to behave in your divorce. So having said all that, I have a couple tips for people who want to feel validated in a no-fault divorce state, but have lawyers like me who tell them it's just not relevant and we shouldn't bring it up anyway. And if you want me to bring it up, it's going to cost you a fortune. But that doesn't exactly make you feel better at the end of the day either. So the first tip is to keep your expectations realistic. Like I just mentioned, your lawyer and the judge and the court system are interested in figuring out what to do with the property, the debt, the kids, spousal support, child support, and the like. They're not really interested in validating you, and that's not going to happen. Don't expect the judge or anyone else to punish your ex for being a bad spouse. It's not going to happen. And if that's what you go into a divorce hoping for and expecting, you're going to feel that much more deflated at the end of the day when the judge has a very nonchalant attitude towards what your spouse did to you. It's going to make you feel even worse because not only did I not get validated, but the judge didn't say anything about it at all. I didn't get any kind of favoritism. That's not what the business of divorce is about these days. The business of divorce is about helping you figure out a couple limited issues, but not about making a determination that one or both of you has been a bad spouse or one has been a worse spouse or you've been a good spouse, etc. Focus on the things that you have the power to change in your divorce. So focus on what to do with the property and the debts. Focus on creative solutions to split these things up that is going to put you in a more advantageous position. That, at the end of the day, is going to make you feel better because you can control these things, and that is something that the judge will listen to. Focus on your kids. Make sure that the kids are not hurting through this divorce. If you go through the divorce process trying to punish your spouse, your kids are going to feed off of that energy. They're going to understand what's going on. Kids are remarkable. They're so much more perceptive and intuitive than we give them credit for. And they can feed off of your energy. So if you have this energy of revenge in you all of the time, your kids are going to pick up on that and it's going to hurt them. It's not going to be good for them. So keep your expectations realistic. Don't expect the judge to punish your spouse for being a bad spouse or recognize that you were the better spouse and that you were hurt and that you were emotionally abused. And focus on the things that you actually have the power to change to make the outcome as positive for you as possible. And my next tip is to grieve your loss. If you feel hurt or rejected, you are going to experience grief going forward. And most people do while they're going through a divorce. That is to be expected. grief, psychologists say, involves denial, then anger, then acceptance. And sometimes even forgiveness is thrown in there. If you can reach that point during the divorce, that's wonderful. If not, that's okay too. But your feelings are going to shift over time. So going through a divorce is an emotional roller coaster. And anybody who's been through it, even a relatively easy divorce, can tell you that it hasn't, it's not always easy, and your feelings do change over time. So today you may feel sad, tomorrow you may feel angry, the next day you may feel deflated, and the day after that you may feel hopeful. It's just a big cycle. Now, grief is normal, and it's completely normal when you're going through a divorce. And it's the process that allows your soul to heal after getting out of a bad relationship. So accept it. Accept that you're not going to feel great going through this, but don't expect that your grief is going to be projected on the other person by the judge or by his or her attorney or your attorney or anybody else. Introducing that element into your divorce, your grief, will not help you get to acceptance or get to a resolution. And it certainly won't help you move on. So don't expect the divorce to help your grief. And that brings me to the final point, that you need to find a spiritual way to get through the hurt. Now, people think that the resolution to their divorce will provide a resolution to the pain and the feelings of loss that they have from being in a bad marriage. But I can tell you that 100% it does not. The day that your divorce is over is a very bittersweet day for a lot of people. A lot of people are happy that it's over, but they're sad because they've just been through emotional turmoil through the divorce. They've been through a bad marriage, and now it's time for them to pick up the pieces and move on. And frankly, some people don't know how to do that because they've been stuck in this rut for so long. It's not benefiting you to hold on to your hurt. In fact, it may be hurting you. So you need to find a source for figuring that out and being able to release your pain and grief and hurt. Because I promise you, the divorce is not going to provide you with that feeling. It won't. Even the most favorable outcomes that I achieve for my clients, they still feel very deflated at the end of the day. And I think they feel disappointed because they expect that once the judge bangs his gavel and says, okay, you're divorced, it's official, and everybody signs on the dotted line, that they're going to walk out of the courthouse clicking their heels. And it just doesn't happen that way. They still feel bad. They still feel the grief. So the sooner you can get to a point where you start working on that grief, the better. Trust that karma is real and release your resentment to the universe. I know that's a hard thing to say, especially while you're in the trenches of a divorce, but that's a better way to approach your feelings rather than expecting that the divorce is going to provide you with these good, happy feelings at the end of the day. Some divorces take years to sort out, and holding on to your hurt and the negative energy and expecting the resolution of the divorce to provide a resolution to your pain is misguided, and I can tell you it won't happen. So the sooner you accept that, you find another outlet for healing yourself and not expecting that the divorce is going to provide you with feelings of validation, the better. I hope you found today's podcast on feeling validated in a no-fault divorce state helpful. Thank you for joining me today on the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and please share. You can find me on my website, www.baumgardnerlaw.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook, and I've put those addresses in the notes. You can find out more about me on my Amazon author page. I'm attorney Rebecca Baumgardner-Rini, helping you proceed through your divorce with a clear head and a clear heart. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.